I dipped my spoon into the bottom of the ice cream container. It was the perfect last bite. Gooey caramel swirling around creamy vanilla ice cream and two maple-sugared pecans that added just the right amount of crunch. But I couldn't enjoy that bite. You see, I'd not only eaten the entire container of ice cream, but I'd managed to eat almost a full bag of popcorn, half a bag of cookies, and dozens of Hershey's Kisses. I feel completely sick. And in a rash of disgust, I swept up the wrappers and the remaining food, and I threw them in the trash, vowing never to eat that kind of crap again. But then, after passing out for a few hours in my sugar coma, I woke up to the siren songs of those cookies in the trash. And yes, I answered. I went over to the trash can, I retrieved those cookies, and I polished them off. Once again, my insatiable hunger drove me to new depths of shame. Now, this was me at age 12. This is me at age 20. I was an emotional eater, and I used food to bury feelings of shame, remorse, worry, anxiety, and even joy. But I wasn't the only one. You see, I reenacted that garbage eating bender in a YouTube video that garnered probably about 60,000 views and dozens of comments. Comments like, oh my God, I've done that. I can't believe other people have done that too. And I promise you, you have clients who have done that too. But let's play a little game. I want everybody to close their eyes right now. Okay, play along with me. Go ahead and close your eyes. And I want you to raise your hand if you've ever been sitting at the computer late at night going through Facebook posts and answering emails, and you've had a bag of cashews or chips, very healthy chips by your side, and before you know it, they're almost gone. Raise your hand. Have anything like that happened? Okay, next question. Keep your eyes closed. Have you ever gone to bed with something on your mind weighing on you, and you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't stop thinking about it? So you go downstairs, you get a bowl of cereal, a bowl of ice cream, just to quiet your head. Raise your hand. Okay. Have you ever gotten off of a really disturbing and upsetting phone call and gone straight to the kitchen hoping to find something that you could snack on? Raise your hand. Be honest. Okay, next question. Have you ever had a treat that you were eating that you were really excited about that you didn't want to share with anybody? Raise your hand. Have you ever eaten for comfort when life was a little tough? Raise your hand. Okay, you can open your eyes. Congratulations, about 98% of the room are emotional eaters, okay? You're in good company, right? Good company. Now, I want to talk to you about helping your clients overcome emotional eating. Because guess what? Like Rita Marie said, it's vital that your clients who are chronic dieters address and heal what drives them to eat, what drives them to gain weight. Because if they don't, they can't follow through on any plan that you have to give them, no matter how healthy. The numbers stack up. The research is there. But if they continue to binge, if they continue to snack, if they continue to be drawn to foods that are not good for them, nothing's going to get accomplished, right? You guys with me here? Yeah. Okay. I've been blessed for the past 30 years to be doing this work with women all around the world and some men, people who are emotional eaters just like me, just like some of you, and it's made all the difference in the world in their health and their longevity. So we're going to talk about why your clients struggle and haven't gotten results, partly because they're emotional eaters, or really a big part of it. Three primary emotions and personality traits that drive their eating. How to ensure that keto and intermittent fasting aren't just another diet that they're going to fail at, okay? We don't want another failure on your hands. Also, what tools your clients need in order to stick to a healthy plan of eating, and also a proven step-by-step plan for healing that you can use in your coaching practice. Is anybody interested in that? Okay, great. First of all, what we know is that 98% of all diets fail, right? We've all heard that statistic. Pretty dismal, if you ask me. Pretty dismal. And the reason, of course, is because of these underlying causes. So I want to talk to you about the fact that no matter what foods they're eating, you know, even the healthy foods, if they're, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people who have gotten, they've learned so much, they've studied so much, they're eating better foods, but if they're still emotional eaters, you know, it's not about the food. If they're still emotional eaters, it's not about the timing. So we want to dig underneath this so that that kind of information can actually help them. So the gap we're going to talk about today is about emotional eating. And that's the bridge. That's the bridge between the amazing science and amazing information and all that you have to offer your clients and their being able to follow through, right? Because it's not about the fix, it's really about the follow through. So what does it mean to be an emotional eater? Well, we come in all different kinds of shapes and sizes. There's a lot of misconceptions about emotional eating. You know, people think you have to be obese to be an emotional eater. Not so. Of course, there are thin people who are emotional eaters who are driven to eat. They're driven to snack. You know, they might just be exercising their way out of it constantly. You know, or they just have a speedy metabolism, but they're still obsessed and compelled to eat. It could be somebody who undereats. An undereater can be an emotional eater as well. Because they're, you know, first of all, if somebody restricts, they're high restrictors, think about it, if they're like in extreme control, it's because they're out of control. You wouldn't control something unless it was out of control, okay? So if they're under eating, they're restricting, that's for emotional reasons as well. So we come in all different kinds of shapes and sizes, obviously. This is a chart that I created after the Jelinek chart for alcoholism, and I did it for emotional eating because there's a lot going on for emotional eaters. And emotional eaters, you know, we don't come out of the gate as binge eaters, right? Like, we don't start that way. We develop, we progress into that form. So I want to talk about the progression of emotional eating. So I'm going to talk I'm going to point out a few things on here because I know it's a little hard to see on the screen. This is as somebody's progressing as an emotional eater. They're drawn to carbs, sugar, and fat, my three favorite food groups, I will confess. but they're drawn to that stuff. That's, you know, they're not binging on salads, right? Let's be clear. Also, binge eating, obviously a big telltale signs of an emotional eater, but not, somebody isn't always a binge eater. Sometimes people will say to me, I don't binge, therefore I'm not an emotional eater, but that's not true. If somebody is drawn, let's say, you know, they're just eating potatoes instead of broccoli, they're choosing bananas instead of apples, the high carb, the high sugar content, you know, those choices, even if they're not binging, that's for emotional reasons as well, and I'll get into why in a minute. Nighttime eating. You know, staying up late, eating, you know, not stopping, not going to bed, just staying up and just really abusing ourselves. I mean, sleep's another way we abuse our bodies, right? We just stay up and go past the time when we should be going to bed. But nighttime eating, of course, is part of that. Neglect of personal hygiene. This is when we're getting really down in the progression towards our bottom. You know, we don't care. Like, emotional eaters just don't care. They don't care about flossing their teeth. They don't care about, you know, showering. It gets dark. For some emotional eaters, it gets really dark, okay? So this is another sign. Also things that have nothing to do with food. Low self-esteem, telltale sign. You know, I mean, lots of people have low self-esteem aren't necessarily overeaters, but most overeaters are suffering from that. Overeaters are also overdoers, okay? Some of our best doers in the world, they're very active, they're very busy, they're doing a lot, they're running circles around everybody else, but they're paying a price for it as well. Resentment and blaming. Big, big telltale sign, someone who can't get out of that victim mode, can't get out of that blame mode. Sure, they cover it up with smiles and niceness, but there's a lot buried underneath there that drives their eating. Also, isolation. You know, isolation is really a product of people's binge eating. When they feel bad about their weight, if they feel bad about what they're eating, you know, and they're in that hole of binge eating or in a cycle of it, they'll isolate. But then the isolation itself, of course, will drive more eating as well. It's a dark hole. So you might have this woman as a client. She says, I'm going to order a broiled skinless chicken breast, but I want you to bring me lasagna and garlic bread by mistake. Anybody have one of those? So a telltale sign or something that's a problem for emotional eaters is denial, okay? It is a problem. And on your sheet, on your seats before you sit down, there's a sheet of paper. And I want to offer you a gift today and relating to helping your clients come out of denial. And that's to add some questions on your intake form, some questions on your assessment, whatever you do as an assessment. I want to give you a gift, which is 50 assessment questions regarding emotional eating that you don't, I wouldn't recommend you ask 50 questions. You only need a few, but you can grab from this list of 50, okay, and put them either in your assessments or your intake forms or even on a quiz if you want. If you want to know, trust me, it's better to know ahead of time if your clients are emotional eaters than 6 months down the road when you've been trying to get somewhere with them, you know, putting them through intermittent fasting, putting them through good nutritional programming, and they can't do it. Wouldn't you like to know ahead of time what you're dealing with, right? So ask the right questions, find out, then you can modify and work with them having that information. So if you fill out that form and give it to me at the end, you know, or we can collect it at the end, you know, I will send that to you. Super helpful. Okay, let's talk about the spectrum, the emotional eating spectrum. Because in my experience, and I have a quiz on my website, not all emotional eaters are created equal, right? And we're not created, we develop into them, but still, you know, there's emotional eating on one end of the spectrum and there's food addiction on another. I completely qualify as a food addict. I could eat 5,000 calories in a sitting. It was gross, okay? But that's where it took me. So how do you know where somebody is on that spectrum? I want to talk about this. It has to do with control and consequences. Okay, so let's take a look at here. On the left side is the quadrant where somebody's just an emotional eater. I think we're all hardwired to have an emotional connection with food, right? So, I mean, it's just the way I believe God made us, so we'll subsist as a species. So on the left side, somebody's got a lot of control. Perhaps they go on a cruise, they gained 5 pounds, they did a lot of drinking, a lot of eating dessert, okay? And they come home, they do extra workouts at the gym, they say, no more sweets for me. They lose the 5 pounds, they're fine. That's a high level of control, right? So the consequences for them are going to be very few. Okay, not a big deal. Again, emotional eater, but not a big deal. Go to the far right side of this graph here, and you've got somebody who has very little control. Okay, once they eat a sweet, they're off to the races. They can't stop. Okay, and they're not just eating sweets. I mean, why eat sweets when you can eat, you know, add to it something salty and then something chewy and then, you know, it goes on and on and on. Okay, somebody has no control and they're going down that dark hole of binge eating, you know, and they've gained a lot of weight. They've got a lot of consequences. Okay, and these consequences cover the gamut. And we're talking obviously about their health. They're ruining their health, but perhaps, you know, their husband or their spouse isn't too happy about this, you know. No more sex, no more fun in the bedroom. You know, somebody doesn't want to be seen even with the lights on. You know, the kids are saying, you know, we don't want to lose you at a, you know, we want you to make it to our high school graduation. Job performance, you know, when we have carb brain, you know, we've been eating sugar and carbs, we're not as alert, we're foggy-headed. So consequences is how we determine how far somebody's really gone with this. This is where you're going to end up with somebody as a food addict, okay? But what do we do about this? Vital, absolutely vital that we deal with the underlying causes. We must deal with the underlying causes. I'm going to talk about how to do that. I also just want to warn you about the diet mentality. You know, as much as we know that, you know, there's good science around keto and around, timing of our meals and all this, as much as we know that, emotional eaters are going to translate that information into, it's going to help me lose weight fast. Okay, you just got to know that's what you're dealing with. Is they, you know, they'll say I'm doing it for my health, but they're not. They're trying to hack their weight. You know, and not that there's anything wrong with that, ostensibly for somebody who's not an emotional eater, but if somebody is, they're not going to get where they need to go unless you've dealt with those causes. So that quick fix mentality, just beware of that. Beware of a client that's just like, give me the diet. Let's get on with it. You know, they're missing some important information, which is that it's not about the food and the weight. Like, how did they get there in the first place? Let's ask some questions about that. Okay. The feelings of deprivation are going to come up. If you're dealing with keto and intermittent fasting, you're going to have people who are freaking out because of the deprivation. You know, and Michael talked about that as well. You know, you don't start out by fasting for 3 days. But there's also, you know, I'm going to talk about why people freak out. The good and bad thinking. You know, if I eat this way, I'm good. If I eat that way, I'm bad. That's problematic for emotional eaters because they're just so stuck in that diet mentality. It's hard to get rid of it. You want to wean them off the idea of good and bad. Also, we want them to start listening to their bodies and their internal cues. So, so important. But they're always like, give me the diet. Have you guys had clients who do that? Like, just tell me what to eat. Come on, come on, tell me what to eat. You know, it's like they want something outside of them to fix them, but they need to start listening. We all have a divine physician within us, I believe. And we need to, like, make sure we're helping our clients connect with that, you know, as well as add the external information, but don't be dependent on that alone. Also, when you go on a diet, you have to come off. Important information. And we need to address the underlying causes. So I'm just telling you to, like, beware of your clients who are in that diet mentality mode. So I want to talk about the underlying causes. Okay, in my 30 years of research of emotional eaters, what I've learned is that we talk a lot more about what food is doing to us than we do about what food is doing for us. Okay, and this is where I live. As I talk about, you know, I like to do research and really study this. So there are three primary driving emotions that drive people's overeating. We use food as a painkiller, okay? And it does a good job. That's why we're binging on carbs and sugar, right? Because it kills the pain. What kind of pain? Emotional pain. Doesn't matter. I mean, it could be from a job, from a broken relationship, from trauma as a child. So we're eating to kill pain. We're also eating as a form of escape. And a lot of people here are old enough to remember the Calgon commercial. Remember the woman in the bathtub? Calgon, take me away, right? That's what we do with food. We're like, food, take me away. Like, just let's check out. Let's get our favorite binge foods, our favorite TV show, and let's just check out, okay? And that's because of fear, you know? And most leaders are very accomplished people most of the time, but they've got fear running in an inordinate amount of fear compared to people who aren't emotional eaters. It's like the Norton antivirus running in the back of their minds, okay? And they just want to, like, check out from that because it's stressful. And the last one that you wouldn't think about is punishment, okay? And because it's like food's a reward. How could it be punishment? But if you think about where emotional eaters and food addicts take it, where they go too far, they're binging, they feel disgusting, they're bloated, you know, the next day they feel bad about themselves, they cancel their appointment with friends. That's not a reward. That's a punishment. Why? Because of subconscious guilt. Okay, emotional eaters carry a lot of guilt, and they're just kicking themselves over it. Now, to go one step deeper than those emotions, what's causing the pain, the fear, and the guilt? I want to talk to you about the anatomy of the emotional eater. Okay, and this is, you know, these are personality traits that I've identified, actually 24 traits that I've identified that emotional eaters have in common. Like, not all, they don't always have all 24 traits, but I'm going to tell you about the top three, okay? The first one is people-pleasing. Big-time people-pleasers. And I mean, I'm telling you, I was the worst offender. You know, emotional eaters have trauma as children, okay? They have trauma, and they didn't necessarily, not always. I mean, I had a really good childhood, but I didn't get this foundation of self-esteem from my parents that, you know, maybe other people got. And so I looked out to outside of myself for it. So I was always doing things to try to please people, like this woman here. She's like, sure, no problem. Consider it done. Anything you need, right? Emotional eaters are great at this. The problem is we burn ourselves out, right? We're like running ourselves ragged, trying to do for other people and get those atta girls. And then not only that, we're kind of pissed off because guess what? Nobody's ever as pleased as we think they're going to be, right? So we go home kind of grumpy and we're like, yeah, you know, I'll reward myself and have the I deserve it binge. So that's a big problem. Do you see how this has, people pleasing has nothing to do with food and yet it has everything to do with food? Okay, this is what we have to start looking out for. Anna said it earlier. You know, 25% is food, 75% is how we're living. These are some of the subtle ways that emotional eaters live that are driving their eating. Another one is being extra sensitive. Okay, emotional eaters are super sensitive. It's like they're, if you're an emotional eater, have you ever heard, you know, oh, you wear your heart on your sleeve, or don't be so serious, or, you know, lighten up, right? Because we are kind of like intense people, because we feel a lot, you know, and sometimes it just hurts to be alive. You know, it hurts. There's like everything hurts. People's comments hurt. The news hurts. You know, animals who are being tortured hurts. And we just cover ourselves up with food and fat because we don't want to hurt so much. And I just want to tell you, there's a way to deal with that sensitivity besides eating. Racing minds is the third one I'll tell you about. Overeaters are overthinkers, let me tell you. Right? Does anybody relate to that? Just racing minds, like, what do they think of me, and how did that go, and how am I ever going to get this done, and how am I going to do this diet, and how am I going to fast, for God's sakes? I'll die if I don't eat breakfast, right? Like Michael was talking about. Like, I couldn't possibly not eat breakfast, okay? So our minds never stop. They never stop. They're so busy, and a lot of times that craving for carbs is just to shut our heads off. Like, we're just so sick of our thoughts, okay? So these are things that, as coaches, you want to look out for and help. You want to have a way to help your clients with this stuff. Because if they just start doing, you know, whatever you tell them to do, and they're all of a sudden without their crutch for their racing mind and for their sensitivity and for, you know, those thoughts they have about themselves after they just killed themselves trying to please somebody who wasn't pleased, you know? You want to deal with that. We've got to deal with the underlying causes. When you deal with the underlying stuff of your clients, they will be so much more successful with whatever plan you give them or try to help them with, okay? Otherwise, it's almost, it doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't work for them, and it'll be just another diet that they can't do, and you don't want to set them up for failure. So I want to talk about the pros of intermittent fasting real briefly, okay? Obviously, less focus on food. You know, if you're not eating, you're, like, in the clear, and a lot of people like that for that reason. Like, emotional eaters are like, just get me out of the kitchen, you know? They can avoid food. That's not necessarily a solution, you know, because they still need to deal with why they're driven to eat. But it still, it gives them structure and control. It cuts them down. Obviously, they're not eating at night. What a great thing if you're actually helping them not, you know, not eat at night, because night eating, 75% of emotional eaters do most of their binging from 4 o'clock on, okay? That's when life gets, like, truthfully, that comes from a buildup of stress throughout the day that they don't have a way of dealing with. So that's when the food, that's when they're, obviously, their willpower is down. That's when it's a lot harder to resist. Health benefits, that's all we hear about here. This is the amazing, amazing science on this stuff. Okay, so I'm not going to cover that. I'm not qualified to cover that. You guys have done a great job. But the cons of intermittent fasting. For emotional eaters, I have to qualify that. I'm talking about emotional eaters. That's my zone, okay? So I'm talking about specifically for people, your clients who are chronic dieters, what you need to watch out for. The diet mentality, of course, being all kind of excited about going on a diet because that they think there's a quick fix. They just are easily seduced by that idea. The idea of deprivation and restriction, that's hard for emotional eaters. Getting too hungry, hard to transition to eating. Okay, and I'm going to show you a few. I actually did a poll before I came here from my tribe and asked them about intermittent fasting and keto, okay, and their experiences with it. And I'm going to share some of their feedback. Overeating at mealtime, overlooking, you know, making it about the food and not dealing with the underlying causes. And not having tools, you know, for when they're hungry, for when stuff's coming up. And that's really what's happening. That's what's so scary for emotional eaters, is the stuff that's coming up. Remember the pain, the fear, and the guilt. That's what's coming up, and that's what they feel very ill-equipped to deal with. So this person said, my intermittent fasting experiences have been no breakfast, a shake for lunch, and a healthy dinner. I thought this was cute. Although a healthy dinner is like, I'd better stuff myself now before it's going to be another 24 hours before I can eat again. somebody else said, no results. I would just stuff myself during the allowed hours. Now, don't get me wrong. I got comments of people who had good success with this as well, but I'm just reading some of these to show you the pitfalls. I would binge eat once my window opened. So transitioning back to eating, you know, that's a problem for overeaters. So let's talk about the pros of keto. Obviously, the low carb. I always recommend low carb, like, for my clients, because, you know, I'm a sugar addict. If I have carbs, you know, of any real significant amounts, it ignites a physical addiction to sugar, like, the, you know, and what, that's what carbs do. And so, you know, and I've rarely met an emotional eater who isn't more physically susceptible to sugar addiction. So pros of keto, low carb, limited food choices, giving them more structure and control. You know, again, giving them that structure cuts down on the nighttime eating, and of course the health benefits. The cons of keto, getting hooked into that diet mentality, the deprivation, that's a problem for a lot of them. You know, they're excited about it, but then they're struggling with it. The hyper-focus on food. You know, this is tricky. You know, if you give emotional eaters more time to think about food, it can be troublesome for them, okay? So getting too hungry, obviously, transitioning, you know, to eating, overlooking the underlying, same as intermittent fasting, overlooking the underlying causes, and they need tools to deal with living without carbs. This is, guys, for emotional eaters who are very dependent on carbs, this is somewhat traumatic for them to cut carbs out. You know, for me, it's the best way to stay free from overeating, you know, is limiting the carbs. I think it's great and super important. But yeah, initially, you're going to have people freak out, okay? For emotional reasons, obviously. This woman said, because I couldn't eat carbs and I also missed having a sweet treat, I would make sugar-free chocolates made with coconut oil, peanut butter, and cacao, and always overate those. I was eating too much fat and too many calories because I felt deprived. So you've got the deprivation thing going on there. One woman said, I lost some weight but became extremely moody and emotional. Cutting out carbs is really not good for me, as it definitely affects my emotions. Well, no kidding. You know, like, that's the point, is that, you know, anytime, I mean, this is why, again, the diets are a problem for people, because if you cut out the stuff you're so emotionally dependent on, you're going to be kind of emotional, right? And that's what people, they don't know how to do, like, deal with that. And so you can close that gap for them as health coaches and inform them that it's not that it's a bad idea to cut out carbs. It's just that you aren't equipped yet to deal with the stuff that's coming up. You know, less food means more feelings, guys. It's simple math, really, okay? But if you don't have a system and if you don't have proper tools to help them, if you don't have a system for helping them get through that stuff, they're going to say, screw it, I can't do it. This woman said, I currently eat keto and enjoy it very much. It helps me make better food choices. However, sometimes I do feel panicky when I want a carb-rich food and feel that I can't have it. Again, these are like lifetime dieters, guys. They are traumatized by dieting. Okay, and rules and deprivation and this kind of thing, it is triggering for people, okay? I want to talk to you about my system. I don't have time to go through, the whole thing. I'll give you the first few. It's a 7-step system. The first one is connection and community. Like, nobody can lose weight, you know, and cut out carbs and do these things on their own, okay? Even just with a coach, it's not enough support, okay? So what you want to do is really provide more support for them. I've been doing, like, this path for 30 years. I still get support. You know, I'm not cured. You know, I'm healed, but I'm not cured, you know? And so I still get support from other emotional eaters, and I have a community of emotional eaters in my programs, you know, that, and through Facebook and through group calls from women worldwide, you know, because that support makes it so much more easy. Centeredness. I talked about the tools. What do you do when you've got that hunger? What do you do when you've got all those feelings coming up? First thing is set up a morning practice, okay? I call them the 6 self-care success secrets. I have to put money in the bank first thing in the morning, every single day, that I can draw on later in the day when I'm stressed, you know, when problems have piled up, when I have no more willpower, okay? First thing in the morning, we've got to feed our souls. Emotional eaters are starving. They are starving for connection, for love, for spiritual fulfillment. We've got to give ourselves that. And also clean eating. What I found works best for my clients who are chronic dieters and have tried everything out there is 3 meals a day with nothing in between. Okay, but I mean, this is like, I've personally tried every which way, and my clients have tried every which way. They feel so freed by this. Very simple thing, I call it 3 meal magic. Very simple. What it's doing is it's helping them see that they're emotional eaters because they're used to just snacking throughout the day, you know. But it's regularity for their bodies. It's just, I mean, there's it's like it's so crazy that like the first week in my program, once they start trying this, it's like they're feeling so much better. But what I was going to say about this is that, you know, definitely putting 12, at least minimum 12 hours between dinner and breakfast, you know, at least 12 hours. But the three meals, in my experience, if they're emotional eaters, is vital. You know, they have to know they've got another meal coming soon. You know, but definitely I highly recommend the 12 hours between dinner, minimum 12 hours. But I don't recommend, you know, 14, 16, 18 hours if they're emotional eaters. I don't recommend it just because it's stressful to them. You know, they get scared. Like that woman said, she gets panicky. Maybe, and it's not that somebody can't try it, but not right off the bat, like has been said. But I would still have them eating three meals because they want to know they've got food, and it's part of self-care, you know, when they've been dieting and restricting and depriving themselves for so long, they need to know they're going to be taken care of and that they can take care of themselves. So as coaches, I want to help you hit the bullseye, okay? One of the dilemma for health coaches is trying to eat healthier on their own, themselves, because guess what? It can be a dilemma, obviously, if we're telling other people how to eat and we've got our own issues, which everybody does, okay? So it's super important to address that. Also, the imposter syndrome, feeling like I don't have enough tools to really help people. Now, if you're working with Dr. Rita Marie, you've got tools, okay? There's no question about it. But helping them with emotional eating is going to help you feel even more equipped to actually help, you know, to really have coaching success. So how to have coaching success? Transform your own relationship with food. You know, a lot of people think I certify people as emotional eating coaches, and they think I couldn't be an emotional eating coach because I am an emotional eater. But I disagree. You know, it's actually like 9 times out of 10, my clients are emotional eaters, and they're going through my system, they're overcoming it, and then they have a personal story they can share with their clients, and it connects them to it, to their clients. Their clients trust them more because they're not some skinny mini saying just do that or some Jillian Michaels yelling at them. Identify if your client's an emotional eater using the questions that you know, if you fill out that form, I'll give you those questions. Use your journey to connect with your clients, and then help them apply a formula that works. And my formula does work. It's tried and proved. It frees people from the compulsion and obsession with food, and that just makes it so much easier to get success with them, okay, and to have them follow through on everything that you're teaching them. So you have a choice, right? You can keep doing the way you're doing, give them all the physical help, the biological help, without that very important piece of the emotional, or you can integrate, you know, and have it be a fully emotional, physical, mental, spiritual solution, which is going to just get them over the mark, you know, help them get over the line so they can be successful. I do offer an emotional eating breakthrough session, and I want to offer that to you today. And what I'll do is I'll help you identify the number one struggle. If you have a client who's struggling, or if you just want to have more success with your clients, we can talk about that. We can talk about the one shift you need to make in order to be more successful in helping your clients. Or if you're struggling yourself and you want to just really up-level your relationship with food, we can talk about that. That's a $400 value, okay? It's a very intensive, like 45 to 1 hour session, and I'm happy to do that with you. And what you do, I should probably give you the link for that. That's healyourhunger.com/apply. So go to healyourhunger.com/apply. And I want to say for live streamers, because you didn't get that piece of paper, you can email questions@healyourhunger.com and just put in the subject line gift. Okay, so anybody who's watching, put gift in the subject line and email me at questions@healyourhunger.com, and I'll email you that gift. And I think that's a wrap. Thank you all very much.